It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 93% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
And Joe Pakovitz is here.
Hello, hello.
It's Father's Day. Now, by the time you listen to this, it's not Father's Day. But right now, it's Father's Day.
For us, it is.
Yeah.
Well, for you, it is. Well, me and Joe.
For you, it is.
Yeah, I'm the only father in this room. And you know what? It's not fun.
Yeah, it is for sure a crazy job.
It's not your birthday. Yeah, let's let that be known now. It's like, they're always like, oh, I'll make you breakfast in bed.
Yeah.
First of all, you have to call your dad. Right. So, yeah. So it's not about you.
It's about all fathers.
It's about, yeah, right. It's just like, well, I got to pay it forward.
Yeah.
I called my mom. My mom said, happy Father's Day. I was like, no, that's the wrong rank.
Yeah.
I was like, I gotta go up.
I gotta shoot this up.
Yeah, you shouldn't ever have your parents say happy Father's Day.
Yeah.
Unless you're in a TARDIS.
Yeah. Right.
Well, any activity that needs to have its own day to try to sell you on it as being good is probably bad.
Well, I appreciate the thought, because, you know, dads get shit on.
Right.
It's like, let's not shit on this guy, but really, we're probably going to have to shit on this guy.
At least today.
I mean, I have a two-year-old. He's going to shit on everybody. He's literally going to shit on
us. He's literally at some point.
He's out of diapers now, and he doesn't really get why.
Yeah.
We haven't been in the room in a while.
No, that's true.
No, last week, thank you all you guys for being understanding and listening to the 18-minute podcast I recorded as I'm waiting for a cab to take me to the airport. I had a pretty good weekend in New York. Talked to a lot of friends of mine that listen, and got my cousin Walker's been on the show, got him very, very obsessed with the Mike Tyson mysteries, so that's a win.
Yeah.
So it was decent all around.
You're like the Prometheus of good television, John.
Okay, I'll take it.
It's like, you don't bring fire to the people, but you bring, this really well thought out, great thing they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
He watches all this stuff so we don't have to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then Kate Kulczyk watches everything.
Yes.
So I don't have to.
So at the televerse.
Yeah, the last time I saw her at DePaul, I was like, I'm thinking of watching this. She's like, I've seen it all.
Yeah. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. I also got some nice Silverage books. Stopped by Silverage Comics in Astoria, which Gus has owned for 25 years. We posted their 25th anniversary. They got written up in the Huffington Post.
Oh, that's awesome.
And apparently part of Serpico was filmed there, and I didn't know that.
Oh.
So they're doing well. Got some good stuff from them. Royal Collectibles in Queens. Found some great stuff there. Amok Time out in Long Island has wonderful toys. There's some really great shops in New York that I've been going to for years and years and years. And spent a decent amount of money in. So if you're in that area, those are all good places to go. And if you're in Manhattan, go to Midtown Comics, because really, what are you doing?
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, that place.
That's probably one of the coolest comic stores in the country, easily.
It's pretty great. They have three. I've never been to the third.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have one in Times Square.
I've been to one by Union Station. It's like right down the street, right?
By Grand Central Station.
Grand Central, yeah.
Yeah, that's the smaller.
Chicago.
That's the smaller one.
Jesus.
The one that's
huge.
Yeah, but the one in Times Square is two floors. And they have comics on one floor, and then upstairs is figures and some back issues and statues and toys, and it's
Candyland.
It's pretty great. Yeah, I worked by one of them, then I worked by the other one, so that was my regular store for years.
Wow, it's like having a permanent convention in your neighborhood.
Yeah, well, you know what? When Hot Toys comes out, they have it, so you don't have to just order things online and imagine what it's going to be. It's one of those stores that's so big, and they do most of their business online. Like, it's very, very few stores can you just assume something's going to be on the shelf.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter the price point. Like, there were Sideshow statues coming out, and I'm like, well, Midtown Comics has it, I'll go see
it. Just check it out.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, they have prime real estate and anywhere pretty much on the island of Manhattan.
Yep.
Yeah, they're paying their rent. Yeah, they're fine.
even in this climate of New York rent, where Toys R Us is closing in Times Square, they'll be okay.
Yeah. That's awesome. Good on them.
But speaking of places that have everything, Joe just came back from Space Fest.
Space Fest in Tucson, Arizona.
I've never been to Arizona.
Yeah, it's hot.
Does
it look like Breaking Bad, which is New Mexico, which I'm assuming is the same state?
It's pretty much.
If it's the same state, does that mean it used to belong to Mexico and we said this is ours now? Yes.
Yeah. It's desert mountains.
We want this unlivable land.
Yes. Right. Give us part of your unlivable land.
Yes. Sure, we have forests and mountains and plains, but this.
Right. We want
to be in the middle of nowhere.
We want to own a place and then name it Death Valley.
Yeah.
That needs to be ours.
Before they invented marketing, apparently. this is in Tucson, Arizona. For those of you who don't know what Space Fest is, it is much like the San Diego Comic-Con or the C2E2 for NASA nerds. They bring in astronauts and space historians and engineers for the various programs and just all kinds of interesting guests. And then anybody who's been a veteran of conventions as a whole, whether it's C2E2 or something else, will know the format. You have your kind of astronaut alley for the autographs. You have your vendors area. The festival was started back in 2007 by a married couple of space artists, Kim and Sally Poor. Kim was a commercial space artist. Whenever anybody needed a rendering of what a planet might look like, or NASA needed a picture of a spaceship, you know, they'd get Kim out there and draw.
Or the Hildebrands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is what Middle Earth will look like, too. Right.
There's a hobbit on the moon. And so he got to know Alan Bean, because Alan Bean, former Apollo astronaut, was an artist. A couple of the astronauts are actually artists. Michael Collins from Apollo 11 is an artist as well. He's a painter. And they got to know each other because Kim opened up a space art gallery called Nova Space. And they decided to have a festival where the astronauts would get together and it was mostly originally art based.
Yeah.
But then people want to meet the astronauts. You know, there are space fans out there. There's a whole community of them.
Yeah.
And so it evolved into this thing. Whereas first they had like six people in 2007. Now it's a couple thousand people attended this, and they held it in Star Pass Resort, which is beautiful. It's tucked up in the hills of Tucson. And it's absolutely gorgeous.
Is it always in Tucson, or is it like, does it go to different cities?
It's bounced all over the place. It was in Pasadena. It's been in Phoenix. It's been in Tucson. Yeah. Basically, California, Arizona. Everywhere that's hot and that has a high concentration of space folks, because a lot of the former astronauts live in Phoenix or Tucson.
Because they're retired.
And in Pasadena, you've got Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's really interesting. This isn't the first time you've gone, right?
This is the first time I've gone, yes.
Oh, okay. Then
yes.
I think maybe we've talked about it before, because I didn't know it was a thing. And when you mentioned it, like, I am not... I can name, like, two astronauts. I can name Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. I can name, like, the first two dudes on the moon. I like the idea of the space race. It's one of those, like, periods in history, I think, that we were actually doing, like, awesome stuff as a species.
There's a lot of it in New Frontier when Darwin Cook passed. We spent
a lot of time talking about that era of the space race. And so it's always something I've been interested in. And it's like as a kid, you know, you want to be an astronaut. Like, I wanted to be an astronaut. I signed up for that Mars One thing. And then my roommate told me she'd break my leg, so I couldn't go.
What's the Mars One thing?
Mars One thing is they want to send people to Mars. And they're not kidding. So they're...
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger promoting it?
No.
Because Buzz Aldrin is wearing the shirt that says, Get your ass to Mars.
This is done by, it's hard to say. Basically, there's a program where they're underfunded like crazy.
Oh, yeah. Right. They've had cuts left and right. I have a cousin that works for NASA.
Really?
He's working on like laser programs. All he does is lasers.
That's really
lasers.
Cool.
Lasers. Like,
My cousin Allison's brother is working for NASA on lasers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm always worried that like one day he's going to be like, yeah, we all got laid off today.
Right. Yeah, because you never know, because it's like half a cent on the dollar goes to NASA, and it's like they're super underfunded. So, But the Mars program is done by people that aren't NASA because they're kind of privatizing space travel. It's like Elon
Musk. Exactly. That was
one
of the big talking points from Space Fest was the fact that they're shifting from government to more of a private government partnership.
And that is an interesting argument because Neil deGrasse Tyson, I'm like a huge fan of that guy. He says a lot of times that it's not going to happen. That you can privatize space travel. Elon Musk is a billionaire. He can try to go to space, and he might. But Christopher Columbus didn't privatize the ships that came to America. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying he discovered America. He's a monster. But the government funded to get Christopher Columbus to go because it's expensive.
Yeah,
same
thing
with right, exactly. So they could privatize it. People will be able to go into space. Space tourism will be a thing. But the guys who are going to go land people on Mars, it's going to be government. The government's going to do it.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Because
it's too dangerous. It's too expensive.
Well, not only that, but there's limited profit potential. You know, private business has to make a profit somehow. So there are certain limited applications like space mining or energy on some of the
They keep
moons
talking about
they're doing
planets.
Those kind of orbital jumps now. Like Lance Bass was really into that.
Right.
Like they'll take you up and then bring you down.
Right. Well, the
like a helicopter trip, basically.
Elon Musk is SpaceX company.
Yeah.
They're sending stuff in space, and then they're trying to land it on, like, barges. And
they
this
have.
Year,
They've
they
done it.
They just did it. Yeah, this year they've been trying a couple times, right? And it didn't work, or the thing blew up. They did it. It worked now. So it's like, all right, that's, like, another step. So this Mars One people, anyone could sign up, and it was basically like, we're going to Mars.
Is this the one where they're going to leave you on Mars?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're for real.
And it's a one-way trip, yeah.
It's a one-way trip to Mars because they're like, we have to colonize another planet. They're like I said, they're not kidding. It's supposed to be like 2030, but it's probably gonna be longer because deadlines. It's not gonna work out. It's gonna go a little later. But anyone can sign up. There's all this like tests, essays. You make a video, all this stuff. They already selected like the top 100 people. They break them down into groups of 4 each or something like this, or 5 people each, and you train with your group to all right. We're gonna live with these 5 people, and we're gonna be on Mars, one way trip, all that stuff. If any member of your group flakes out, the entire group gets retired because they want you to work as a unit. So they wouldn't, like, if we were going and John, you were like, I'm not going, screw this, I can't, I got kids. And you dropped out of the program, we'd all have to drop out because you have to train as a unit. They don't want it, they won't just take me and Joe and sign us up with 3 other guys.
It seems like a very complicated Match.com.
Oh, yeah. It's insane.
How many guys are joining up just to get laid?
I'm sure a lot. And thousands of people signed up. They actually selected the first 100, and now these people are like doing talk shows now. Like one of the girls was on one of those like talk shows where like a bunch of women talk about stuff in the morning, you know?
Like The View?
The View or something. Yeah, I don't know the name of it. And they're like, they ask them questions. They're like, yep, you're ready to go. And they're like, yep, I've got a husband, but I'm attempting.
But screw that guy.
Yeah, it's crazy. But it's something like, it'll be in our lifetimes probably, is that we'll at least land a person on Mars. Like, because, I mean, they had a Mars panel, right?
They had a Mars panel. And they were talking exactly about this. What's the, you know, how do we get there? Do we want to, there's 2 thoughts. You send somebody up there, kind of like we do with the moon, send them up, bring them back. And get your data in a row first, or just go haul hog, build the big ship first, go out there and do permanent colonization. And there's pluses and minuses of each of those. Right now, they're still trying to work on getting a lot of information about, you know, how are you going to live there, what's the radiation like, that kind of thing. The biggest problem is radiation.
Yeah, because you can't be outside unprotected like at all.
Right.
It's like without a suit and all this stuff, it's like...
Well, there's no atmosphere either.
Yeah, it's like a very thin atmosphere, but it's not the atmosphere that'll kill you. The radiation is so bad.
The atmosphere will kill you too.
Well, for sure, but I'm saying the radiation is so bad, it's like, I think you can't even have you need a blast shield.
What kind of radiation is it?
Solar radiation.
Because like we have,
there's no ozone.
They don't have ozone, right?
Right.
It's like they used to at some point, or they.
Yeah, it had an atmosphere.
Oh, just like us.
Well, Mars,
yeah, right.
Mars was a lot hotter. It had oceans. It had an atmosphere.
It had dance clubs.
And then you know, Martians started polluting it, and then that was the end of that
global Martian warming.
But yeah, so there's a whole
John Jones.
God damn you. Last Martian Manhunter.
The last
I like styrofoam. I just wanted to make styrofoam.
But so they got a whole... Some of the designs that they showed at this panel, for example, for spacesuits, one of the biggest problems on Mars is dust. it gets everywhere, and it's very fine, and you breathe it in, and it will kill you too. So what they did was they designed spacesuits where you enter in from the back, you know, through the rear, and then if you want to get into anything like your space vehicle or your habitat, you basically back into the hatchway, you attach your suit to the outer wall, and then you unzip it in the somebody helps you unzip it in the back, and then you climb out of the suit into the building or into the rover.
That's
so
really
the suit's
smart.
Always kind of just
suit
stuck
is
outside.
Always outside.
Yeah, that's really smart.
That way you don't track all the dust in.
That's wild. Yeah, so it's like, that's actually really interesting that this is the kind of thing, because I think we were saying a little earlier, maybe we got a little off topic, is I hadn't heard of this or we were talking about this, and then I was talking to my roommate about it, and she's like, what are you guys talking about today? I'm like, oh, we're talking about space, this, what's it called?
Everybody calls it Space Camp, but space it's Space Camp. Fest. Space Camp was a bad movie in the 80s.
Yeah, but Leah Thompson was in it. If it was Space Camp, I'd be there. Right. She still looks fantastic.
Hey, if Leah Thompson wants to go to Mars, I'm all part of this.
Right, who
Mars
else wants to go with?
See, like I was saying, a lot of guys are going to Mars. If Leah Thompson's in my group, I'm going to Mars.
Go to Mars. Yep.
You know how my chances are probably now like 1 in 3.
Oh, it's not bad.
Because I just
got to
worry about the other guys in my group.
Exactly. Yeah. And there might be another girl in the group. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it's the dad.
Yeah, but Leah Thompson's in the group, there's not really another girl in the group.
But that increases your percentage because you're competing with one less guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's only 5, you know what I'm saying? But I'm saying this is really cool that they actually have, there's enough space enthusiasts to where they can have a convention just like anything else.
Right, and that's what surprised me because, I mean, loyal listeners will know that we're friends with Dr. Paul Booth at DePaul University who does fan studies. So when I first got to Space Fest, one of the things that I thought about, because I've been reading a lot of the academic literature about the fan studies, what are space fans like? Like, who becomes a space fan? Are they are they different from comics fans and music fans and sports fans?
Right. What makes a science fact fan different than a science fiction fan?
Right. Yeah. And you know what I found was basically there are a couple different types. You know, there's heavy overlap, obviously, but you have the astronaut fans, the astronaut junkies, who are basically looking to find out, what was it like? Like, what was the experience? They want to
firsthand
figure
account.
Out the experience of going into space or going to the moon, and that's what they're all about. Then you've got the techies, the hardware junkies, who are totally about the spacecraft, in some cases couldn't care less about the astronauts or the science behind it. They want to know the nuts and bolts. How did it happen? And what are we doing now as far as unmanned
probes?
Like,
what's
the
cutting edge of the
where are we in technology? Then you have the science fans, the people who care more about what we're learning out there, you know, astronomy geeks and things like that, where they're more forward-focused. They don't really care about the Apollo missions, typically, and what happened in the 60s. They're card-carrying members of the Church of what's happening now, so... You know, they're about that. And finally, the last group are collectors. And yes, they do have space collectors. There's a thriving market for astronaut autographs, especially for the older astronauts.
Yeah.
And we are going to be losing a lot of these guys soon. Out of the 12 guys who have walked on the moon, 7 are left. The youngest of them, Charlie Duke, is 80. He'll turn 81.
Wow.
In October. So we're going to have, a lot of these guys can't travel anymore. They can't, do a lot of these shows. That's why Space Fest 7 was going to be the last Space Fest in this particular format. They're throwing around the idea of doing a Space Fest Lite, possibly in conjunction with San Diego. Or another event, but this was the last one in this format where it's a standalone, all-inclusive convention.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really wild. It's one of those things, you know, it's been kind of in the news because, like, Bowie and Prince and everyone, like, all these huge guys are dying. And obviously famous people die every year, but they're saying it's, like, the baby boomer generation, and I think part of the space guys might be part of that same generation, is there's this huge group of people that are very recently... very iconic, right?
Right.
Like Neil Armstrong died a couple years ago, maybe 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah, he died in 2012.
Okay.
We just lost Ed Mitchell, another Apollo astronaut, in February. So this is a process that's still going on. And, you know, the shocking thing about guys like Prince or Bowie is that they were considered relatively young.
Right. And they, you know, a lot of times we didn't know they were sick.
Right.
But I think it's something where it's like, these guys are culture icons. Like you said, it's 12 people walked on the moon.
Yep.
That's pretty exclusive club, you know, and it's just like no one has any plans to go back to the moon, so it's like there'll be a time where
there have been more people have played Doctor Who than
it's crazy. And it's there will be a time, maybe very soon, where there won't be anyone alive who's walked on the moon.
Right.
You know?
And
because, as we said, we're underfunded. We're not going back.
I guess, yeah, they said
it'd be one thing if we were going to the moon every 5 years.
You know, because they're, I mean, and the same thing, like I said, we've talked to, or we haven't, I invited him on here, but he didn't get back to us. Neil deGrasse Tyson, I've watched a lot of interviews.
Did you ask Neil deGrasse Tyson to come on the podcast?
He does a podcast called Star Talk.
Yeah. And he's on Twitter a lot.
Yeah, and he's very active on social media, and something had come up, or I can't remember, and I tagged Star Talk, the podcast, on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I made like a comment, and then I said, hey, he should come on my podcast, and to be fair, I'll go do his podcast.
Oh, that was nice of you.
Yeah, you know, very generous.
Yeah, yeah.
And whoever runs his Star Talk page replied and said something like, thanks for listening. You know, they just like the regular standard comment. But
you rarely get a no.
Yeah, yeah.
The only no I ever got was Howard Porter.
Yeah.
Well, he posted on Facebook one day, hey, what's everybody up to? I'm bored. I'm like, I'm doing a podcast. Come on the podcast. He's like,
no,
I don't want to be recorded. It was kind of that thing of like, you could tell he was just shy about it. He was like, yeah, I don't want that to happen. Yeah. But most people are like, sure.
Right. You know. Yeah. And then it's just,
and then you never hear from them again.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, yeah.
But with these guys, we're going to have no more living memory of these events fairly soon. And what's disturbing is that's also transferred over into the popular consciousness. Because like you said, you can only name two of these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're probably my age or older and you remember the events, obviously you're not going to forget them.
Yeah.
But somebody at Space Fest, a young gentleman asked Michael Collins which space shuttle he was on. Because if you're, say, 40 or under,
you
don't know the Apollo moon landings might as well have been Julius Caesar, right, as far as you're concerned. You only know the space shuttle. And so, you know, people have forgotten kind of about these guys. In fact, Charlie Duke was saying recently they got invited to, in Houston, there's a comic book convention, and they asked some of the astronauts who happened to live locally to tag along, and they were amazed that nobody knew who they were. They were just walking around. Everybody was paying attention to all the pop culture people.
Yeah.
And these guys were just like,
It's crazy. It's like one of those things. It's like, you know, our society is pretty awful. Where it's like, why do I know who even the Kardashians are? You know what I mean? It's like, right, it's a family famous for really nothing. And, you know, I don't know how many there are, but it's like, I could probably, like, most people you could stop and see could name you more Kardashians than they could name you. And I'd say, like, if you could name more than one person that walked in the moon, because everyone, I think, knows Neil Armstrong, first man, and all this stuff in the history books. Name me two. Name me three or five or half of them. You couldn't do it. You know what I mean? But it's like, we could sit here and we could name people. You know what I'm saying? Like, the average Joe on the street could tell you a meaningless, nobody, not contribute to society. And these guys are like, they're find me a bigger hero than guys. I mean, these guys could have died.
Right.
You know, it's like, thank God no one's died in space. You know, I know the Challenger and all that stuff, but it's like, these guys went to the moon with stuff that's less powerful than
your phone.
Than my phone.
Right.
And came back, and it's like, you know, it's like, it's crazy.
Well, and they're, you know, most of them are military veterans. Some of them are actual combat veterans from the Korean War.
Right, Korean War, these guys were like...
So they served the country. They served... Then they joined NASA and served humanity, really, even though the space race was, you know, part of the Cold War and funded like it.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things that came up in the Apollo panel. They gathered all these guys, all the Apollo astronauts, into a panel, one of the panels they had there. And a common theme was, our society has become too risk averse. We're no longer willing to take the big bets and the big gambles. We're no longer willing to dare to fail greatly the way we did. You know, we don't have a John F. Kennedy who's saying, we'll go to the moon in a decade.
We also don't have
throw down that gauntlet.
We also don't have a Russia. A lot of what fueled the Space Force, as you said, because it was the Cold War, was that Russia was already doing it.
Yeah.
And we don't have another power as big as us that's rubbing our nose in anything right now. What we are is this power that's slowly dissolving and collapsing.
Right.
They, it, But and because of that, we're putting all our money into keeping the rich happy and keeping our
and amusing ourselves with pop culture
and keeping our military up. So we were this big guy that spoke softly and carried a big stick, and now we're like this James Cagney, kind of like we're getting smaller and smaller and meaner and meaner.
Yeah.
So doing things that just make us look like these great men. As I said, there's no ROI to it. There's no return on investment.
Yeah, the original space race was kind of a military thing, too, because the thing that scared the crap out of people in 57 was
Russia on the moon.
Was Sputnik launching, and then all of a sudden they realized, oh, that means they can put a nuclear warhead anywhere they want.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's another thing, like you said, I've recently listened to a speech, I can't remember where it was, but Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about it, and he says, Sputnik was a hollowed-out ballistic missile. It didn't have any explosives on it, but that was why. You're right. That's the entire reason we started the space race was because, oh, my God, they're going to have – it's like the ultimate high ground. You know, so when we landed on the moon and it was like, oh, okay, Russia's not going to go to the moon, that's why we stopped going to the moon because it's like, all right, we don't have to worry about Russia doing it. We did it. It was kind of like symbolic and everything, but it definitely started. It was the military. All those NASA scientists, the original guys were German missile guys.
Right. Dr. Von Braun and his team of German scientists. Well, we got the better Nazis
than essentially, the Russians did.
They got a lot of hardware, but we got the software and we won.
Yeah, and that's why Dr. Strangelove became that cliche of having the weird German scientist.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, for decades in the 60s and 70s, every time you turned to your scientist character, especially if it was like cartoony, because they were all Nazis.
Yeah.
Tom Lehrer. Have you ever heard of Tom Lehrer?
No.
The song with Wernher von Braun?
Yeah. Tom Lehrer was a political satirist. Basically, he was a songwriter who was like a one-man daily show in the 60s. And his songs are hilarious. And a lot of them, if you don't know the history, they kind of float out. Although he does have some albums that aren't political at all that are hilarious. Like
Poisoning Pigeons in the Park.
Exactly. He's got Christmas carols and things. But he had this song called Wernher von Braun about like why are we trusting Nazis to send them up? And he's like and the last lyric is in German or English, I know how to count down, and I'm learning Chinese since Wernher von Braun.
Yeah.
And it was this whole thing of like, hey, we're trusting Nazis to do everything for us.
And it's interesting because Von Braun was a rocket scientist. He wasn't he was 100% a Nazi, to be clear. But he wasn't, he was basically, the guy just wanted to go to the moon. He thought we would have been on the moon in like the 50s.
Yeah, if he was Russian, he would have been a communist. Right. If he was American, he would have been a capitalist.
He was working for whatever government would fund space.
Totally, who's going to give me money to build my toys?
And that's what I'm saying. This guy really believed in what he was doing.
Yeah.
There's a quote, I don't know who the quote is, and I'm sure somebody much smarter than me could quote it better, but it's something like when they launched the first V8 rocket, they said the rocket performed admirably. It just landed on the wrong planet.
Right.
Because they had launched it to England. But it's like, these guys didn't build these things to bomb people. Unfortunately, war is usually the thing that pushes technology to
war
the
next. War is profitable.
Right. I mean, that's like, you look at World War II, it's like, that gave us the atom bomb, all stuff.
Gave us radar, gave us a whole bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. Like, the technological advancements they make in wartime is like what pushes, quote-unquote, society, but it's terrible.
And again, it's that competition.
Right.
Is that, well, if we don't do it, the other side's going to do it, and they're going to kill us.
Right. It's the threat, and that's why our space program has died off, because there's no threat.
Right.
The Chinese have a space program now. They'll get to the moon before we will.
Yeah, I think
we've already have nuclear missiles capable of going anywhere in the world, so who cares?
But if they were colonizing Mars, would have more
funding. I think that's what it is. Is like China announced that they want to take a robot to the moon. They're going to go back to the Earth. They already did land the robot on the moon? Okay. But that's the thing, is like now that'll be the next space races. All right, once we start to see like the bigger implications of like global warming, I think it's going to be times where we're like, all right, we really got to figure this shit out.
Yeah, we fucked this place up. Let's go find somewhere else to fuck up.
And that's probably what we'll actually end up doing.
And that's another thing. If we can't agree, if we can't get anyone to agree that, hey, we're turning the planet into an unlivable situation, let's fix that. we have a debate about that, which is right. not ebbing.
Like, oh, yeah.
How are we going to decide to what and, other planets to go and to and how we're going to get there?
To be clear, yeah. too, it's much easier to just fix the planet we're already on than to try to go to another planet where, like you said, the closest one is Mars, and it's, we can't live
and
there.
And it's unlivable, right?
Yeah, you know, it's like it's, we they talk all the time about terraforming the moon or terraforming Mars, and I'm sure at some point, if we don't annihilate ourselves, we'll have the technology to do all these crazy things. But if we can't agree on if, whether or not fucking global warming is real...
And,
you know,
and Apollo 9 astronaut Rusty Schweiker gave a talk on the threat of asteroids. Because
oh, yeah.
an asteroid that's about 40 meters wide, about the size of a fairly large truck, if that hit, it could wipe out a city.
Yeah,
a city about the size of Kansas City. It just take it out if it hit directly in the city center. And he made the point: who's going to decide not only how we attack space and go into space and colonize things, but even like. To protect ourselves against the threat of asteroids.
Yeah, and it's like it's hard.
Is it the UN? Is it how can we?
Who
we have
do
no
it?
Central Earth government, so a lot of these things that impact the entire planet, everybody's got their own narrow focus, and nobody can think beyond their own situation.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting. It's like it's kind of a cliche because it's like how many movies have been made about the asteroids coming, but it's not a science, it's not a mystery anymore. We know what killed the dinosaurs. They found the caldera or whatever they call
right.
it. I can't remember what the crater, it's in the Gulf of Mexico. So, and it's dated at like suspiciously 82 million years ago or whatever it was, the right. dinosaurs got annihilated. And it's like, and we're, it's math. It's
yeah.
at some point we will get hit with something.
It's statistics because
yeah.
we've also built cities everywhere on the globe.
Yeah.
Unless
no matter, yeah.
We've gotten lucky so far because the last two impacts were both in Siberia. We're both in relatively unpopulated
Tunguska.
Russia. Right, Tunguska. There was one
was
very
like, what,
very
1909,
recently
that Tunguska
yeah.
blast, right?
Yeah. There was one very recently where a very tiny, asteroid as far as asteroids go. Just exploded over a Russian town.
Yeah,
and
they had the dash
caused all kinds
footage.
Of da- yeah, they, all
yeah,
kinds of
pretty,
several people were
that.
Injured. Any bigger, and people would have died.
Yeah, and that's like I'm saying is like it's just math. At some point, something will happen, and there is no plan. There's no they've got nothing. There is an interesting. I don't know why I was looking this shit up because I'd go on Wikipedia and then get lost. somebody at the United Nations there is a department, and their job is to okay if aliens show up. This is the department they'd call. So there is a plan in place if, like, we do get contacted, what our response as a society should be. So, like, the
So United, we have Men in Black, basically.
Well, I essentially, it's probably the closest thing we know about to Men in Black, whether or not the KGB or somebody has a different plan. The United Nations does have an office that... I mean, the guy never works, probably, right? Because
yeah. What are you gonna do? They haven't landed,
and yeah. it's basically when the aliens show up, it's your job to press to tell the world, "Hey, aliens are here," and then to figure out how to talk to them.
Yeah, and they are starting to hip onto the idea that we are one species. We have space law, for example. About launching satellites, because we have a lot of space junk out there.
Yeah.
That's going to come crashing down pretty soon, actually.
Yeah, so the orbits deteriorate.
That's like Skylab in around 1980.
Where it hit Australia.
Which, yeah, you're probably too young for it, but we had a satellite that, like, basically hit Earth's orbit.
Yeah.
And for months it was in the news, and jerks were buying helmets.
Yeah.
Because, that's what jerks do.
What they thought, but, like, a hat would protect them from, like, this
they thought,
giant thing.
Skylab was going to crash into us, and nobody knew where it was going to land on the planet
right.
because it was in a slowly decaying orbit.
Yeah,
right.
You don't really know what's going to come down. So Skylab was a satellite. It's not like this...
No, it was a space station.
Like the International
like
Space
Like the International...
Station,
it was the prototype of that, and people were on it.
Okay.
They had several astronauts. They had a whole Skylab remembered panel with several of the astronauts who were on there. And that's an interesting story because it didn't go well. They launched it.
Well, it crashed.
they launched it. One of their solar panels failed to open. So then while trying to get that open, something else got messed up. So the radiation shield. So they had to put a new radiation shield into place. The thing was a mess. And then finally they got it working up and running. And then they just simply abandon it. And if you abandon something that large in space without any plan for getting it out of orbit somehow,
it just deteriorates, yeah, right? And the gravity of the planet.
And you
just
can't necessarily control
down.
Where that lands. And
right.
Eventually,
they can do math, but like you said, you can make an error or something could interfere with it. It's like it's not a for sure thing.
Yeah, most of it crashed in the Indian Ocean, but bits and pieces of it landed in Australia, and I guess it killed a cow.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Let us never forget.
Yes. Sacrifices must be made.
Why is that cow remembered? but yeah, that is a thing. It's like meteorites and stuff that fall to Earth. That stuff, I'm sure you said there's like a market or people buy like memorabilia and spacesuits and shit or helmets.
Yeah, what was in the deals panel besides the autographs and books and things? Were people selling like pieces of Apollo capsules? And there was that story in The Right Stuff about one of the astronauts who was shoving souvenirs in his suit so he could sell them because they went into space.
Yeah, well, I mean, that brings a whole bunch of different things. Number one, yes, people had space memorabilia there. Mostly it's going to be in the form of autographs because that's what's portable.
Yeah.
And, you know, NASA has not, like, given away lots of stuff. You know, some of the astronauts would take stuff, space pens, things like that. But you don't get, you know, here was a piece of Apollo 11. No, it just didn't. There's not much of it
that
to begin
crazy,
with it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe gloves or something. And all that stuff is in museums anyway. Very few of it is in private hands. So it's mostly autographs as far as the memorabilia goes and patches and things like that. But it's books because most of them have written autobiographies. There's a group of fans that's on a Facebook called Space Hipsters, and several of them kind of like how we do, you know, shelf porn with all of our omnibuses and things like that. They do it with their astronaut libraries.
And okay.
That's actually the best way to get an astronaut's autograph is to get them to sign their book.
Because
it tends to be a lot cheaper to do that.
And they're selling their book.
Right, and they're selling their book.
If you're buying it there, it really... I mean, most signings are like that.
Yeah.
When you have signings in the shop.
Yeah.
We
have the book in the store.
Yeah.
You buy it, you get the guy to sign it. Yeah.
Yeah, or if you're like Buzz Aldrin and you get divorced and your ex-wife gets a certain percentage of anything that you sign that's a photograph or a space object, but not a book...
Oh, there you go. You just switch.
You keep
hey,
all the
I,
you
I
keep all the book
books.
Money. Yeah, he wants to sign books.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm selling this book. Screw you.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
He's like one of those guys. He's one of those Buzz Aldrin. He's what, like in his 80s, maybe 90s.
He is exactly 86 years old.
86. So this guy is born in like you know, late 50s, maybe. So or no?
No, he's born in the 20s.
Oh Jesus! All right, so really old timey guy. And the only reason I know who he is because, like I said, I'm an idiot, but he's the second guy in the moon, and he's the guy, he gets famous because somebody told him we didn't go to the moon, and instead of just being like, no, we did, he hit the guy.
Yeah, well,
that's like, because this, I mean, well, that'd be like, hey, you're a part of the single biggest historically significant event that humanity's ever done. I think that's a bigger deal than I think people think, that we went to the moon.
Right.
And this guy's the one of the dudes that did that out of 12 guys out of billions of people that ever lived. It's some jackass who probably just works like a 9-to-5 like the rest of us bums. Tells the guy, oh, you didn't do that thing. You didn't risk your life.
Yeah,
you know?
You didn't go through all this stuff. You didn't see friends die.
Yeah.
You know, Gus Grissom, you know, White and Chaffee, or, you know, several astronauts died during the run-up to the moon landing. So you went through all this stuff, and you saw your friends die, and you finally do this great thing, and you come back, and now there's this whole cottage industry of what they call moon hoaxers who deny that we ever landed on the moon.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, patently ridiculous. But
yeah, I remember I knew a guy who was like that, and he was like, why is the flag flying? Like, because there's another bar going across the flag to keep it up.
Yeah. And it's like, I've read all the, I didn't think that was a thing. I was like, no one really believes that, but there's like websites, like people really do. They believe that, and I don't know. It's, I get it, because like, all kinds of, they killed Kennedy, you know, the CIA or whatever.
Right.
Martin Luther King got killed by the CIA or whoever, like that's confirmed. You know, they did all this like really crazy stuff at the time, so I get why people think that was a thing we did. But then like people have been like, well, technically it would have been like harder to fake it than to just do it,
right?
They said like there's whole where people have to like go through and say like, yep, this is why this is this way. This is why this way. Like, people that just defend
it. We didn't know enough at the time to fake it.
Yeah. Yeah, they said because you had no clue.
People thought, seriously thought that we were going to land on the moon, and the space, the dust on the moon was going to be like 10 feet thick, and the craft would just sink into the dust and never be seen again.
Yeah.
I used to have a bit in my stand-up about people who think we faked the moon landing. It's like, if I was going to fake the moon landing, I'd pretend there were monsters up there.
Yeah.
And just go, look at that! We're never coming back to the moon again!
But it's, well, and that's why I think it's important that, I mean, obviously it's well-documented, and these guys' stories are well-documented, but, you know, we're going to miss, again, having that living memory of saying, yes, I did that. I was there.
Yeah.
And same thing for the mission control guys. In fact, at Space Fest, there's a new documentary about just the mission control guys. The tagline is "The Men Who Put the Men on the Moon." And those guys are also rapidly dying off.
Yeah.
Although they, if anything, they tended to be slightly younger than the astronauts. People don't know that the average age of the people in the mission control room while the Apollo program was going on was less than 30. Think about that.
And back then, you know, it wasn't a youth-oriented culture yet.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, 20-year-olds weren't getting big jobs. They were apprentices. So that is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they wanted these guys straight out of MIT or Caltech. Number one, they would work 24 hours a day and could do it.
For cheap.
And new ideas. They wanted innovation. And plus, they were going to have a heart attack, you know, because the stress levels were so damn high. Yeah. Well, and it was amazing.
We had talked earlier because, you know, you said it was crazy expensive to do what we did, obviously, put the man on the moon.
5% of our budget.
Yeah, which is awesome. And that's, I mean, seriously, just take that away from the military because we're, you know what I mean? It's like we can afford it. And John, we were saying is like the return on that is enormous, though. It's like they list all the benefits that they've had from discoveries they made in space or technology they used to put guys on the moon and all this stuff. And it's like another quote from Neil deGrasse Tyson. He said that the bank bailout we just did for Wall Street, like, I don't know, 5 years ago, whatever it was, that sum of money, whatever that number is, it's a stupid high number, is greater than the entire running budget of NASA. The entire time, from like the start of NASA till the bank bailout, we spend more money bailing out Wall Street than all of NASA.
We're an economics-based culture now. We're not a science-based culture.
Yeah.
We're a military-based culture in the sense that
we have a lot of money.
Yeah, well, we produce a lot of weapons, which, you know, are now in the hands of maniacs in Florida.
Yeah.
Right.
We are not, like I said, we don't have, it was an altruism that did it. It looks like it in hindsight, but like we were scared of Russia.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we did it.
It was a war. It was a peaceful war is basically what it was. We were scared that they would get bigger missiles.
It was an arms race, right? So it's like we were building bigger nukes and we are doing the who can get to their the first, have the quote unquote ultimate high ground. It's crazy because we're not really in an arms race anymore, a physical arms race, but if you think about it, we're kind of in like a technological arms race.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, but the battleground is computers now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Really. It's like how many virus or hacks do we detect where Russia tries to hack us or China tries to hack us? I think our government pays. There's a contest every year to try to hack the Pentagon.
Right.
And they're not trying to. I can't remember. But like they're trying to do it to get people. Oh, it's like, well, you won the contest. You're the guy that hacked it the best or the quickest or whatever. Here's a job and either hack other governments.
Yeah, stop the other guys like you.
Or stop your buddies. Because the curve, it's like the iPhone. Remember that iPhone, the terrorist thing? And the FBI was like,
they
were like, hack it. And Apple's like, no, that's like Pandora's box. We don't want to do it. And they were like, all right, I guess we can't get in. And then like a month later, the FBI was like, yeah, so we hired a guy and he cracked it for us.
Yeah, some 14-year-old somewhere.
Some kid. And that's the thing is like the technology's always on the side of the guy trying to break the system.
Right. And yet we're not using our resources to, again, do that grand adventure. We don't have a sense of grand adventure. Like we're going to do something historic as a society and we're going to go for it. There was a fun infographic and I'll post it on the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page of things that are like India just recently built a space shuttle, kind of like the one that we used to have. And they launched it and it came back. And they list things that are more expensive than India's space shuttle program. And you can laugh about India's space shuttle, but the damn thing worked.
Yeah, and
one of them was Kim Kardashian's wedding.
Oh my God.
Was more expensive than the entire, this entire program that put something, you know, another space shuttle in space and brought it back.
Yeah, but at least those weren't tax dollars.
Right, yeah.
That was privately funded.
But, and that's why a guy like Elon Musk is privately, he's with SpaceX. He's basically leading the private industry charge because, I mean, that guy is essentially Iron Man, right?
Right.
Right. He's like, Tony Stark. He's pretty much Tony Stark. The Tesla car alone.
Right. The Tesla car alone. He just met, like, at the Pentagon. He's made a joke about building Iron Man suits. Like,
did you hear he just refused to sell a guy a Tesla because he was super rude?
Oh, really? Well, he's rich.
He is Tony Stark.
Well, yeah. He was in Iron Man too. He had a cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just keep him away from booze. Okay, we don't need demon in a bottle.
Yeah, seriously.
In real life.
But that's like guys like that and all these other guys that are doing this, because that'll be where it's kind of going to go, where all these like private organizations will fund, like, how are we going to get astronauts to the International Space Station? Well, it's really expensive, and I think Russia is the one that takes us there now.
Yeah, we are reliant on Russian shuttle, you know, basically Russian spacecraft to get to our own International Space Station. Think about that.
Yeah. And it's cool that the International Space Station, I think, is a great example of, all right, the Cold War is supposedly over. We're all working together. This is a joint venture. Different countries contribute to it. This guy adds a module. These guys can use it this time of the year. Yeah. We do the other. You know, they just had that one astronaut. You probably know he was up in space for an entire year. They kept him because they were trying to see the long-term effects of space on human physiology.
Exactly. And you know, the Britain's Tim Peake just came down after a long extended time in space. But going back to John's point, yeah, they're friendly now. We're in these joint programs now. But that doesn't mean they're going to stay friendly.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't mean that technology is going to, even if they stay friendly, it doesn't mean the technology is going to stay in friendly hands. You know, if an ISIS gets a hold of something that we've developed and can weaponize it, you know, we could be in trouble.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where we're living now. We're not building a wall against a force that can break down a wall. What we're doing is we have a wall and we're trying to stop it from springing leaks. Because when was the last time we were afraid of an army? Like 30 years ago, what we're afraid of is terrorists. What we're afraid of is small groups of people that are going to just kill civilians.
Right.
And because it keeps happening. It happens less than a crazy guy in America kills people, but it is happening.
Yeah, it's still happening.
To the point where a crazy guy killed a bunch of people and said, yay, ISIS, because he was crazy.
Yeah.
And we spent 3 days going, ISIS is attacking us. And then we realized, no, this guy was just nuts.
This guy was just a nutball.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. This guy couldn't handle the fact that he was gay.
Yeah.
And went insane.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's a whole nother thing. Space, well, the astronauts in particular are all over the map personality-wise and belief-wise, but the space fans have tended to be socially liberal, you know, very forward-focused for the most part.
Yeah.
Even if they're big fans of the Apollo program and some of the historical programs, you know, they also, you know, one of the reasons they look at that as a golden age was because that was one of the few times that we're all in this together. You know, we're all doing this great big thing as a country anyway, if not as a species. And they, you know, that sense of camaraderie and that sense of purpose is really attractive to them as space fans.
I wonder how many of them are Star Trek fans, because that's exactly where Star Trek leads, that no other sci-fi franchise really does, of that we're all going to work together and we're going to do great things.
Somebody asked about that at the Apollo panel, asked the Apollo astronauts, what, you know, it would start off as a Star Trek question, but then morphed into science fiction as a whole because Star Trek didn't exist when these guys were kids. And they asked, you know, what do you think of science fiction, you know, and its relationship to science fact? Several of them were extremely adamant that the inspiration they got, for most of them it was Flash Gordon serials, because that was of their time.
Yeah.
But they said science fiction becomes science fact. A lot of the things that they did during Apollo, an engineer would be watching a science fiction movie or reading a science fiction book and go, that's a good idea. How do we do that? And all of a sudden, 6 months later, they got a prototype working.
Isn't this the Star Trek communicator?
It was.
This?
It got better than that.
Yeah.
Well, that's more, what I'm saying. Is
10
like,
years ago, when you flipped it open, it was the Star Trek communicator.
And who do you think designed the phone that flipped open? that shit was a nerd mm-hmm. that watched Star Trek. Right. You know, it's
I read once where the military looked at the bridge of the Enterprise as a way to do a command structure, to actually put the commanding officer in a chair in the middle of the room that could swivel, and then every department was around him.
Yeah. Right.
He's centrally located. And that's what these astronauts were saying. And it's even some of the mission control guys, when I talked to them privately in their autograph booths, and I asked them, what about, you know, what were you reading? What were you watching? A lot of Heinlein, a lot of stuff like that back in the day. And they were extremely adamant. You gotta get the kids to make science cool again. You have to stoke their dreams, because that's, you know, it's the kid who's reading the Iron Man comic book. It's the kid who's watching Star Trek, who's going to grow up and love that stuff and then turn it into fact. If they don't have that, or if you kill it,
oh yeah,
you know, you're going to run out of engineers. For the first time, I think the Space Fest had a what they call their STEAM room, their science, technology, engineering, art, and math room, where because a lot of people have kids, and they would throw the kids in the STEAM room while they went and collected autographs and stuff like that.
I'd throw my kids in the STEAM room,
right?
They got big, heavy
Father's Day.
STEAM rooms have big, heavy doors.
They do.
And they would have these activities of different schools were represented, and they would do these things. And, you know, that was a really good idea. If you're going to bring your kids to the event, don't waste their time. Show them something that they could be doing.
Yeah, you gotta,
that is directly related
it's to, like a hook
these,
for them.
To these heroes that they're meeting for the first time as well.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
I've actually got two things. The first one is an underused resource in Chicago for space fans or astronomy fans, and that's the Cernan Space and Earth Center out in Triton College. It's on North Avenue and First Avenue, basically. And they have what they call their monthly Skywatch. The next one's going to be on July 9th, where you go to their planetarium, and they give you the lowdown on all the latest science and astronomy and space news. And then afterwards, you can go outside, and members of the Chicago Astronomical Society have telescopes set up. And if the conditions are right, you can actually then go and look at things like Mars and Jupiter and things
then,
that.
People who know what the hell they're looking at will say, yep, this thing here is Mars.
Yep,
this
they'll point Jupiter. The telescope right at it, and you get really good views of that stuff. The second thing is ran into a gentleman who has a monthly radio show called Cosmic Perspective, where he interviews astronauts and various space people. This is on WPKN out of Connecticut, but they have a streaming presence, so you can listen to it at www.wpkn.org. Or if you want to hear past episodes of Cosmic Perspectives Radio, just go to www.lift-off.us, and you can go there, and I will actually post links to a lot of the things that we've been talking about in today's episode on the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page.
Awesome. I'm halfway through Walter Simonson's Orion run, the omnibus. I think I didn't know he had done Orion. I think I remember seeing it on the show.
It was
shelf.
Around 2000.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the monthlies, and I was always like, I got to get into this, and I never did.
Yeah.
I got the omnibus when it first came out. I think it was like a year or two ago.
About I'm getting to it now, but it was something I probably saw the monthly on the shelf, but didn't really know who Walt Simonson was in 2000. And then when I read his Thor run, you know, me and Joe have talked about it, my friend Ken has talked about it. And it was like, all right, his Thor run's awesome. So I read Thor's run when they released that in an omnibus finally.
Yeah.
And it was
it's
just
one of Joe's
awesome.
Favorite runs ever.
I love that. Yep.
I think it's probably my second or third favorite run of all time in comics. And so I was like, all right, I'll get his Orion. I don't know anything about Orion. It started off a bit slow just because everything I know, I think about like Orion and the New Gods comes from like the Justice League cartoon.
And Superman animated series.
Yeah. And so I read it as Ron Perlman is the voice of Orion. But it's a really good run. I'm about halfway through. They do stuff with like the anti-life equation, taking over Apocalypse, killing Darkseid, all this stuff. They go back and forth. It's really awesome. It's great. It's not his best stuff because I think his Thor is kind of like the top of the mountain for him.
Yeah, he'll never top that.
Yeah, and
very few people will ever top that.
Right, yeah. I don't think it's an insult to him. I think it's like he really kind of set the bar.
Yeah, right
for
guy,
long runs.
Right guy, right place, right time.
Yeah, and it's really good. The art's great. It's like crazy Walt Simonson stuff, and it's if you're a fan of him and you're a fan of his Thor, I think you'd get a kick out of it. It's good stuff.
Well, you know what? Then my greatest thing in the world is going to be a recommendation for you. If you don't know enough about Orion and Darkseid, you need to go back to the Kirby the Fourth World stuff. And that's all in trade now. I had the original hardcovers of that, but they did a really wonderful job. I remember in the 90s, they put out black and white trades because they didn't think it would sell. So it was like $12, and I read those.
Yeah.
And back in the 80s, they did these Baxter print comics that were like double-sized reprints because back then, trades didn't really sell.
Yeah. Right.
So you just did more comics. And I had read some of those, but when they started putting out these books, Kirby did four titles. They were all bi-monthly, so he was doing two titles a month. And it was New Gods, which is my favorite, Mr. Miracle, The Forever People, which I don't really like, and then Jimmy Olsen, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And the story with Jimmy Olsen was DC wanted him on an established book. Like, he came to them with the New Gods. The rumor is that... the New Gods were supposed to take over from Thor.
Yeah.
He wanted to kill off all the Norse gods, and they were going to be kind of the next version of the Inhumans.
Yeah.
Because he had initially created the Inhumans as their own book, and Marvel didn't have room on the publishing schedule for a new book. So Stan was like, let's just put him in Fantastic Four. You're drawing that book. And they became kind of Fantastic Four characters, and then they got their own book a few times, and it never lasted.
Yeah.
But he kept wanting to do something that wasn't built on anything else.
Right.
And those four books, they were basically his imprint at the time. So they all kind of touched each other. They rarely touched anything else. Jimmy Olsen, DC, is like, you got to take over a big book. We spent all this money saying Kirby is coming to DC.
Yeah, we like, can't have you come, and then here's a bunch of made-up characters you're doing.
They're like, do Superman, do Batman. And Kirby said, I'm not going to get anybody fired. So... what book do you have that doesn't have a creative team slotted? I'll just do that book. I don't care what it is. And they were like, Superman's pal, Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah.
And he was like, all right. So,
and I'll give him the kudos for not taking somebody's job, because they would have replaced anybody with Jack Kirby.
Oh, yeah. They would have kicked Neil Adams off Batman.
Yeah.
To have Jack Kirby won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I flipped through. They did these really nice hardcovers for the Fourth World stuff. Mm-hmm. I flipped through a lot of stuff I haven't read yet because I'm waiting kind of for like a nice omnibus. But Simonson's a huge Kirby fan, so he references the Fourth World one constantly, where it's like the little asterisks. It's like, as seen in Fourth World.
Yeah, and there have been a lot of attempts to reboot the New Gods. And what ended up happening... Those books are crazy, which is why I like them.
Well, that's what he was in that period where he almost had too many ideas.
Right. It was not like Grant Morrison today, where he didn't really develop anything. He also wasn't much of a writer. He was frustrated with Stan Lee, but you could see why he needed Stan Lee. I always said it's people that – there's a lot of Jack Kirby fans that just trash Stan Lee. And my first argument to them is explain Spider-Man to me. And they're like Steve Ditko. And I'm like, well, now you're not Stan. Jack Kirby did everything, aren't
right.
you? But – it's like when the Beatles broke up and John Lennon put out Plastic Ono Band and McCartney put out McCartney. You could see clearly what each of them brought to the picture.
Yeah.
And they're both good albums, but Plastic Ono Band is John Lennon on an acoustic guitar playing two chords over and over again with great lyrics. And Paul McCartney has these beautiful little melodies that go nowhere.
Right.
Right.
And you see that with the Fourth World. You're like, oh, that's what Stan did.
Yeah.
That's why these books are not the Fantastic Four. But his energy... you could tell he's enthusiastic. It was like when Letterman first went to CBS.
Right.
Like the chains were off him and he could do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
And a lot of that stuck. I mean, mostly what we got is the villains. Darkseid is the biggest villain in DC Comics because of Kirby.
Yes.
Orion is not the biggest hero, and Mr. Miracle's like a C-list guy.
Yeah.
But
all those characters have a pretty big legacy, right? It's like Mr. Miracle, Bart, all these characters are around still. Steppenwolf's going to be the bad guy in the Justice League movie. It's like Darkseid, the Parademons, Kalibak. He did leave a huge imprint with those characters specifically that they're never going to go anywhere. They're always going to be in the books. But yeah, I agree that it's something where it's like it's half the recipe. You really did miss that visionary writing force.
Right, and if he had had a Stan Lee on those books, I suspect that those books would have been more popular, sold better, because they would have been better written and more easier to follow.
Yeah, and they didn't sell. They all lasted about 11 issues. Mr. Miracle ran a little longer because it was the best selling.
Yeah.
And he did have diminishing returns on DC. They kept going, which I loved. Once they finished The Fourth World, which is four volumes in trade, I don't know there will be an omnibus. Might be too big. But then they did The Demon, which was a lot of fun. I bought that. Then Commandy, which was okay. And then OMAC, which was not good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they did like... Then they did like one shots and things like Cobra was one issue and died. And then he did the superpowers when the figures came out in the '80s and he was way past his prime.
Yeah.
But I think Kirby's best work is Fantastic Four when Sinéad is inking him and Stan is writing, like that middle period where they create the Inhumans and Galactus and the Black Panther and Claw. Those are untouchable. That's the right. Beatles of comics in my mind.
Yeah.
But his fourth world stuff is great. In fact, it's so great that I totally ditched what I was going to say for greatest thing in the world
yeah.
because you mentioned the Simonson Omnibus. I like the Simonson Omnibus, but you're really going to want to go back. You know
oh,
what?
Yeah.
You know what? You own a store. Pull the trades off your shelf. I've seen them.
Yeah, we do have them. And I ordered specifically to get to them at some point. It's just one of the hundreds of books that I got to get to at some point.
Yeah. Well, if you can put down hundreds of books to follow us, you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter. That is the official Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. And as Joe mentioned, our Facebook feed is our official news source. Not only do we post when the podcast is out, but we post any news story that we've seen. There were a lot of video game announcements this week.
The convention was that week.
The E3 was this week, and that was almost our show. And then I realized, well, we don't really... We've kind of covered this ground because there's two new Batman games and a Spider-Man game, and that's pretty much we would just say, hey, there's two new Batman games and a Spider-Man game. But you can listen to us on Stitcher or iTunes or we might be on Blueberry. I don't know. I feel like I've submitted it. But you can listen to every episode we've ever produced since 2012 on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. Joe, how can we find you?
I am ZenMasterGuy, one word on Twitter, and I will be posting pictures and links from Space Fest on the Caffeinated Comics Facebook page.
And I am at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take the-